Welcome to Blue Dot, a look at our place in space. I'm Dave Shlom. Time spent in natural surroundings may not just be a fun thing to do, it may be vital to our mental health. In this program, we'll look at how spending regular time in natural places, especially at an early age, can affect our mental, emotional, and spiritual well-being. Later in the show, we'll examine the innovative Nature Bridge at Yosemite program that brings young people to the iconic park for an immersive educational experience that is amazingly transformative for its participants and providers alike. We'll talk to Christina Rylance, director of Nature Bridge at Yosemite, who began her career in environmental education as a participant in the program. Then we'll hear from Anna Bachman from the McConnell Foundation in Redding, California. They provide funding to send high school students to Nature Bridge. And finally, we'll hear from a high school senior, Nicole Curiel, about her experience as a student participant. But first, I'm joined by Kate Fulham as we talk to Florence Williams. Williams is the author of the 2017 book, The Nature Fix, Why Nature Makes Us Happier, Healthier, and More Creative. She joined us via Skype from her home in Washington, D.C. Florence Williams, welcome to Blue Dot. One of the things that I found really fascinating was that you started out, you were living with your family in Colorado, where you had access to nature, where you had access to the outdoors, you know, kind of literally right outside your door, you could go be in a natural setting. And then you moved to one of the most urban environments on the planet, which is Washington, D.C. And could you talk about how difficult that was for you as a transition from going from Colorado to Washington, D.C.?
Yeah, I can. I mean, despite growing up in New York City and feeling comfortable in cities, I then spent 2 decades living in the Rocky Mountains, in pretty small towns and cities in Colorado and Montana, where I had hiking trails right outside my door. I had this almost hourly connection to nature because even, you know, my windows had these incredible views of the mountains. And I had this very pristine, you know, kind of nature right there, and I got a little bit spoiled about that. So when I moved to Washington, I felt like my body went into some kind of shock in a way, like this cortisol bomb had gone off in my brain. It was very stressful for me to be in the middle of a big city after taking such a long break from one. Washington it's a beautiful city, but it's very loud. I live near the Potomac River, which is beautiful, but it's also under the flight path of Reagan National Airport. So there, when I go for walks here, there are these low-flying jets every 90 seconds. You know, so it's really, really a lot of noise pollution. It's gray. There's tons of traffic. There's a lot of air pollution. All these things have been proven to kind of affect our moods and our psyches and our nervous systems. So when we hear an airplane, you know, at 5 in the morning, our nervous system doesn't really know the difference between that and a saber-toothed tiger, right? And it's evolved to be on high alert when it hears a loud, rumbling sound. And so people who are chronically exposed to air pollution and noise pollution, air pollution as well, you know, have higher levels of stress, higher levels of cortisol, hormones coursing through their bodies, they're at higher risk for things like stroke and cardiovascular disease and hypertension. So, I mean, these are real physical effects that are different depending on what kind of environment we're living in.
That reminds me of one of the people you profile in your book, David Strayer, who is an advocate of, you know, definitely not being plugged into your phone while you're driving. What is all of the screen time doing to our brains, I wonder? And how important is it to just completely leave that behind, even though it's nice to take pictures of the place you're at with your phone, just to leave it behind and like you said, just be out in nature and engaging all of your senses?
Well, David Strayer is a cognitive neuroscientist at the University of Utah, and he actually studies distraction, specifically driver distraction, at least initially, and now he studies attentional networks, like how we sort of use the or overuse the attentional networks in our brain, and that's really kind of driven by the frontal cortex of our brain, which is our thinking brain, you know, where we check off our to-do list. And what he has found is that, you know, when we live in our daily lives, which are dominated by technology, when we're plugged into our phones and our email and we're multitasking or task switching, as the case may be, we're kind of overloading our frontal cortexes. We're overloading our attentional networks. And that leads to fatigue. It leads to kind of grumpiness. It leads to feeling not very comfortable in our skin. And I think anecdotally, you know, we understand that. We can relate. You know, when we've been on our phone constantly, it's draining. It's exhausting. And we may not feel like we're so fully present, right, in our best selves with our family members. And you know, I think science has not really caught up with the anecdotal aspects of this. But I certainly think that we know what it feels like when we can really unplug. And we can take deeper breaths. We can have deeper thoughts. We activate other parts of our brain, not just that attentional network and the frontal cortex, but we start activating our sensory brains, which is more of our midbrain level. And when we do that, our bodies and our nervous systems really feel more at home. You know, these are natural environments or where those parts of our brains evolved. We need breaks from our busy lives, and nature can really help us find that.
I'm so happy that we get to talk together about this stuff and how nature can actually help calm things down. I mean, right when I got home tonight, before I even prepared dinner or anything and came on this interview, I said to my daughter, let's go down to the beach and we'll take a look at the moon, and we let our dog run around. And we try to do that just after work to get out of the school day and get out of the work day. And, you know, it really helps. But with children being exposed to screens more, like I've noticed even with the efforts that I've made, my daughter said to me the other day, you know, Mom, going out in nature and taking walks is your thing. And I think that like watching shows is my thing. How do we overcome that? How do we get kids really interested in getting away from the screen and getting a little dirty sometimes?
Well, I think it sounds like you're doing it exactly right, Kate, which is to provide a kind of fun opportunity and a sort of a ritual, in a way, to share with your children. And sometimes they may be a little bit resistant to it, but something is taking hold. You know, your daughter is learning a certain level of comfort being outside and being in nature. And there may be times, especially as she gets older, where she's going to be much more focused on her friends and much more focused on her Instagram account. You know, but at some point, if she has that fundamental relationship and connection with the natural world, she will be able to come back to it. And I think that's a beautiful gift, you know, that you're able to give her. You know, if you can bring her friends outside, you know, and her favorite snacks, and you know, and kind of make it as fun and engaging as you can, I think that will also go a long way towards helping her feel happy in that space and being able to come back to it. And, you know, she gets older. My kids are teenagers now, but they go to summer camp where they cannot bring their phones. And now Right. They really appreciate being away from their phones. Like, they understand that their phones make them sort of anxious, that they feel like they have to respond immediately, you know, to any kind of message or text that they get. And so they have this wonderful kind of antidote to that, which is that they know they can unplug once in a while and go somewhere beautiful.
Yeah, it's funny. When I was working in environmental advocacy and education, we used to do these summer camps with children from age 7 to 12, and we'd stay out all day long with them and really wouldn't bring our phones because we were in the water in kayaks or paddle boards or just with dip nets and scooping up fish and crabs out of the estuaries here on Long Island. And it was just the most terrific day. You're tired at the end, you're salty, you're a little dirty, and but everyone is just very, very happy. And I wonder about that, the move now more towards technology in our workplace and less actively outdoor jobs where you're getting dirty, like farming and you know, other just jobs where you're outside all the time. How is that affecting our society?
Right. We definitely have to make a bigger effort now to get outside because we're not just naturally there anymore like we used to be. And I think one way to talk about this with kids and even grown-ups is to sort of think of access to nature as kind of, you know, a food pyramid, you know, or a diet. And just like any diet is going to have a lot of junk food, it also needs things that are more nourishing. And if we start to think of nature as being a place where we are really nourished on kind of a soul level, and we start to take it seriously for its amazing health and psychological benefits, I think we can start to think that we can start to think even almost think of it as a medicine. You know, yes, we have our junk food, which is our Instagram accounts and our, you know, the time that we spend on social media or in the office. But we also need our nourishment. And as we start to take the science seriously, you know, hopefully our kids will also understand that this is just a sensible thing to do for our health.
As a parent myself, I can attest that with my own children, as they were growing up, providing them with constant access to nature, camping trips, fishing trips, backpacking trips, that even though, like, for example, my daughter just took to that and loved it very much and was a deep lover of nature immediately, my son wasn't quite as much. But that kind of changed once he became, you know, once he got past his teenage years, all of a sudden that nature lover gene just flipped in and he became a full-blown backpacker. In fact, that's how, you know, he and his wife, that's how they spend their time together, is in the wilderness. And so I think a lot of that is just, as parents, provide as much access to nature as possible and don't worry too much about how the kids are responding to it as kids, because as they grow older, they will, that connection is there and it will be there and it will deepen.
Exactly. I think that's exactly right. Thanks for sharing that. Sounds like you did a good job.
Well, and I did have the benefit of they weren't in the cell phone generation. You know, when they were growing up, the smartphones didn't exist then. So I can't say that it's exactly the same as today, but I do believe that the more you expose children to nature and just give them, like what you did, Kate, taking your daughter to the beach and just giving them those experiences, even though they might rather be watching a movie or whatever, that's taking hold. That's having a profound effect that will show up the rest of their lives. And I worry about kids today, and I do sound like the old guy here, but I am. When I was growing up, I had lots of unstructured playtime, and children today have all of their playtime structured by, you know, there's sports that has adults running the sports programs instead of the kids organizing their own games. And just those things that you invent for your own head in your backyard to play games by yourself or with your friends without anybody telling you what to do. I worry that kids aren't getting enough of that now.
I worry about that too. And I think that, you know, the science has shown that kids really learn best when they can have free exploratory play. And, of course, nature, natural settings are just a magical place for that to happen. And, in fact, children's brains evolved exploring nature, right? For hundreds of thousands of years, that's where kids grew up, and that's where our brains evolved. So I think, you know, it's really gratifying and neat to see that there is kind of a new interest, a resurgence in things like forest kindergartens and forest schools. States like Oregon are now instituting statewide outdoor classroom requirements, which I think is wonderful. But, you know, I do think we have a long way to go, and certainly a lot of schools and a lot of educators are not so comfortable yet with the idea of letting kids run loose outside.
You're listening to Blue Dot. I'm Dave Shlom, along with my guest co-host, Kate Fulham. After a short break, we'll continue our conversation with the author of The Nature Fix, Florence Williams. Stay with us. And we're back, and thanks for listening. Let's continue our conversation with my co-host, Kate Fulham, and our guest, Florence Williams. She's the author of The Nature Fix, Why Nature Makes Us Happier, Healthier, and More Creative. Something that I really worry about with especially young boys is that we are sticking them in these factory settings indoors for, you know, 7-8 hours a day and expecting them to conform in classrooms. And a lot of those little guys, especially little girls too, but especially little boys, it seems to me, would really benefit from a lot of unstructured time, you know, out doing whatever. And I look at some of my own personal heroes, like Ansel Adams, whose father, you know, just gave him a ticket to the exposition there in San Francisco and just turned him loose up in Yosemite and just knew that this little guy couldn't function in a school setting and made allowances for that. Or Henry David Thoreau, or one of your personal heroes, Olmsted, who designed Central Park, right? A lot of these people, John Muir, just had this wild itch to get outside and climb and explore, and sticking those kinds of people inside a classroom all day, we are preventing them from becoming the great people that they could become.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And I have a chapter about that in my book where I talk about kids with ADHD who have an incredible reduction in symptoms once they're able to actually explore outside and you know, have adventures outside, do adventure sports, do exploration. That's where their brains are sort of built to thrive. And we're depriving so many kids of that experience by locking them up in schoolrooms all day. I spent some time in that chapter at an adventure boarding school where there are academics, but the academics are built around field experiences and adventure experiences. So they'll learn about the Civil War while backpacking through, you know, battlefields in West Virginia, for example. And I think we need to figure out how to reach more kids and not just not just expect everyone to conform to a certain neurological model of learning.
Do you find personally, and this for you too, Kate, that you have some special places that you've gone in your life that are just, those are the places you go that do have a real magical kind of a healing power for you spiritually, mentally, emotionally, that those are your very special places, that they aren't just being in nature someplace, but it might be a favorite park, national park, or someplace. Like for me example, I love Lassen Volcanic National Park, which is very close to my home, and the Eastern Sierra region. Anytime I'm over on Highway 395 in the Eastern Sierra, I'm just happy. I'm just so happy to be there. Those are like my favorite places.
Well, my special place still, I would say, you know, is out west. Because that's kind of the landscape of my childhood in terms of my nature exposure. So I love those canyons of Utah. I love the rivers out there. I love the Rocky Mountains. And I love the skies, you know, the big skies and the big landscape. So that's where I go back wherever, whenever I can.
My thinking spot, I call it, is the top of a hill very close to my house, and it looks over the Shinnecock Bay, which is part of the Peconic Estuary. That is one of the most prolific and productive estuaries in the nation, and I'm really lucky where I live to be able to go and put a paddleboard in the water, paddle out, open up a Tupperware container, and have dinner in the middle of the bay with my daughter in the summertime. So that's my favorite spot.
That sounds wonderful.
Come on over anytime, Florence. And you too, Dave.
So if there's a parent listening right now who wants to try to make sure that they do the best they can for their child in connecting them to nature, can you give some just really simple practical advice?
Yeah, I mean, I just think, you know, go often. Go often, start small, you know, hang out in the backyard and look at the amazing caterpillars, you know, the butterflies, and listen to the birds and the bark. I mean, children are so good at experiencing wonder, right? They don't really need to be taught how to do that. We just need to kind of unleash them a little bit. In fact, they have a lot to teach us about enjoying time in nature. Children want to go outside. It's the parents who are often the problem. So I think if we let our kids take the lead there, you know, that could be great for everyone. And again, I have these tips about, you know, go with friends. Kids love being out there with their friends. They love being out there with good snacks. Make it a social thing. Make it a food thing. You know, and just let them explore. Chances are you won't really have to create activities for them. You know, they will find their way.
That's true. I found that a dip net in a pond or a bay is terrific. Or if you even take a little colander and shake out sand or dirt and see what's in the inside the earth is really an interesting activity for younger kids. There's one, a lot of great Instagram accounts too. One that I love is Three Green Acorns, the number Three Green Acorns. And this woman brings her children out into nature and takes beautiful photos and talks about different things that they find. Kids just have a different perspective, not only mentally, but physically. They're smaller, so they see things that are at their eye level, which is really fun.
Well, my favorite prescription when somebody, because I inevitably get asked because I have an astronomy background, it's like, what telescope should I get my kid? And my favorite answer to that question is none. What you should do is get your kid a sleeping bag and take them camping where the sky is very dark and they can see the Milky Way. That's way better than a telescope.
That sounds like great advice. So many kids today have never seen the Milky Way. Shocking.
It's an amazing experience. I grew up in Los Angeles, and I remember at about seven or eight, getting out of the car and seeing the night sky truly for the first time. It almost made me fall over with vertigo. It was just overpowering. And that was also a moment when I went, okay, I want to live in a place that looks like this.
Let's hope we all can at least go visit those places.
Yes. Well, Florence, I really enjoyed talking to you and Kate, and best of luck to you. And I really enjoyed the book. The Nature Fix is really interesting, very entertaining and funny at parts and compelling. And I appreciate you getting us all to think about what being outside does to our health and looking at it in a scientific way, because it's something that I think we really all do need to examine. That, like you said, it's part of our overall nutrition. We need to have some contact with nature on a regular basis.
Yeah, thanks, you guys. It's been a great chat. Thanks for having me on. I really enjoyed it.
Thanks to Florence Williams, author of The Nature Fix, and my good friend and co-host, Kate Fulham. Next up is an interview I did with Christina Rylands. Christina is the head of Nature Bridge at Yosemite. It provides a powerful educational and experiential connection to nature for young people at America's iconic national park. Christina Rylands, welcome to Blue Dot. I'd like to start out with your origins. How did you become affiliated with NatureBridge? From my understanding, you started out as a participant, right?
I did. So I was in high school growing up in Southern California, and I had a family who was not particularly that interested in the outdoors, so I was kind of a rogue in our family. I loved being outside. I loved climbing trees. I loved just anything being outside. Wasn't that into sports, but really got into just enjoying being in the outdoors and hiking and backpacking. And so I discovered when I was in high school, there was an opportunity for students when you were a junior or a senior to sign up to go to a place called Yosemite Institute. And every year when I got my yearbook, I would flip directly to those pages because I wanted to see all of the pictures from people who had gone on the Yosemite trip. And by the time I got to be a junior in high school, I applied and was able to go with my class to Yosemite. It was NatureBridge was then known as the Yosemite Institute, and got to spend an entire week in Yosemite National Park as a student. And I ended up coming back again the next year. So I spent two full weeks when I was a junior and a senior in high school.
And was the program, could it tell us about the program then and now? How was it then compared to now?
So you know, one of the really amazing things being in this position that I'm in as a regional director for Nature Bridge in Yosemite, you know, I carry so much of my student experience with me. And when I go out in the field today, if I go out with one of our educators and I see students in the field, there's so much about their experience that just completely resonates with what I experience. It takes me, it's just like transports me back to being in high school. Our students get an opportunity to really become immersed in Yosemite. They get to wake up in the morning and right in the shadow of Half Dome as the sun is coming up. And that was really similar to my experience. They get to spend all day out hiking and exploring in Yosemite Valley, which was something I got to do when I was a student. Maybe going on a challenge hike up to the top of a waterfall, or getting to do group activities with the people in their trail groups, where we got a chance to really bond and learn about each other and learn how to work together. And then also having the opportunity to engage in stewardship. One of the things that I really learned in my experience was what it means to be a caretaker, what it means to care for special places like national parks. And I see that played out so often whenever I'm out in the field with groups today. So in many ways, there's so much more about my experience that is very similar to what students are experiencing today. I'll say one thing that was really different from my experience and what our students are doing today is the role of environmental science and how our programs today really use environmental science as a lens through which students are encouraged to think critically, to make observations about the natural world, to work together, to come up with ideas about making science and scientific investigations to become more aware and understanding of the natural world. And I think that our environmental science programs very much today provide a lot of rigor to just the students day-to-day out there in the field. That was not exactly what my experience was when I was in the program.
Well, the motto of Nature Bridge is connecting youth to the natural world. Tell me why you think that's an especially important thing to do, especially nowadays, and talk about the range of programs you offer there. I'm also interested, do you have experiences for kids to go out into the backcountry for extended periods, for example?
Sure. So your first question about why are these programs so important? And I think, you know, one of the big things that's different between when I was back in high school and when our students are coming to Nature Bridge programs is just the amount of unstructured play that kids get in their day-to-day lives. And I read recently some kind of crazy statistic about, you know, that on average, a lot of kids are only getting about 7 minutes of unstructured play in the outdoors on a daily basis. And they might be spending as much as 7 hours in front of some sort of screen. And that's very, very different from the experience of even 10 years ago. And so the ability for students to come to a Nature Bridge program and be immersed in the outdoors in one of the most amazing classrooms, our national parks, is really something that is very, very important. We have some students that come to our programs that may live in San Francisco and have never set foot on a beach. They've never been to the ocean. And Nature Bridge really believes that all children should be given opportunities to connect with nature, and particularly in our national parks. So that's one of the reasons why Nature Bridge programs are so, so important. We offer typically in Yosemite and throughout all of our Nature Bridge programs, if you were to come to one of our other Nature Bridge programs in one of our other national parks like Golden Gate National Recreation Area or Santa Monica Mountains, Olympic National Park, or Prince William Forest National Park on the East Coast, students have an opportunity to come for all the way, you know, as few as just two or three days, or they can come for an entire week where they're actually immersed in programs in national parks. And so they might come with their school group or some kind of otherwise organized group through through some other kind of youth-serving organization. So they'll come to us for a week. They'll spend a week with our environmental science educators. But we also have, for those students that want to have an even deeper experience, we have backpacking programs where students can actually come and spend a week or two in the backcountry. Not only are they, you know, putting on a day pack, they're putting on a full-on backpack and going backpacking into the Yosemite wilderness for up to 2 weeks. So those are typically programs that are geared more towards high school age students.
You're listening to Blue Dot. I'm Dave Shlom. After a break, we'll continue our look at the Nature Bridge at Yosemite program with its director, Christina Rylands. Then we'll hear from Anna Bachman from the McConnell Foundation in Redding, California. She coordinates a scholarship program that sends Northern California high school students to Nature Bridge. Welcome back, and thanks for listening. Let's return to my conversation with Christina Rylands, Regional Director of Nature Bridge at Yosemite. Can you think of an example? I'm sure you have many, but maybe one that comes to mind of perhaps an urban child or teenager that had never experienced anything like this, and to see, you know, some kind of real transformative experience for that kid.
Yeah, that is played out so many times in our Nature Bridge programs. And, you know, there was one particular occasion, I can't necessarily, it wasn't just one student. I had a teacher who was applying for financial assistance. We offer about a third of our students are on some sort of scholarship or financial assistance to come to our programs. And there was a teacher who had a group of students that she wanted to bring to Yosemite, and she was from Oakland. And in her scholarship application, she showed me two pictures. One picture was, she said, this is the view that my students see outside of their classroom window every day. And when it was a picture of just like downtown Oakland. It was, you know, a really urban setting. And she, right next to it, she had a picture of Yosemite Valley, and she said, my students look out this window every single day, and this is what they see. This is what they know. This is what they experience every single day. This is the environment that they learn in. And her vision was just really wanting her students who know nothing except that kind of experience to be able to come to a place like Yosemite. And she said, I want them to know Yosemite. I want them to know this as another different kind of classroom. And I'll tell you, when those kids, they ended up coming to Yosemite, and I went to go meet them as they were getting off the bus. And I will never forget the sound that they made when they stepped foot off that bus was just an audible, whoa. They were so in awe of what they were seeing, just stepping out of that bus into a national park. Was just that moment alone was transformative right there, and they ended up having just an incredible experience.
That's a great story. And I'm sure that all of the places that Nature Bridge has their programs, like the Santa Monica Mountains, for example, is a place where I had my formative experiences in nature as a kid growing up in Southern California, just on my own hiking up in there. But talk to us about what is so special about Yosemite and what an experience there is compared to just anywhere else you could be.
Well, you're talking to someone who fell in love with Yosemite. I fell in love with Yosemite when I was 10, and I was a Southern California kid too. And I remember being in my yard and pretending like there was a river that ran through my yard. And the tree that was in, I had a big oak tree in our backyard, and I pretended like that was a forest. And when my dad took me and my family on a family vacation, and we went to Yosemite up Highway 395, so it was kind of along the Sierra Crest up and over, and we came in through Tuolumne Meadows. And for the first time, I saw these mountains, and I thought, this is exactly what I've been picturing in my head. And I saw the Tuolumne River, and I thought, this is exactly what's been in my imagination. This is exactly what I've been picturing. And to see Tuolumne Meadows and people who had backpacks, and they were heading off down a trail, and I remember as a 10-year-old thinking, where are they going? What are they doing? I want to go do that. And there's something about Yosemite with just the rivers, with the mountains, especially if you come into Yosemite Valley. No wonder that it's referred to as a cathedral, that it's really an amazing place where kids really get a sense of something that's greater than themselves, and to be really in the presence of awe, and to feel that sense of awe at these granite cliffs, at the waterfalls, at the river that goes through the middle of Yosemite Valley, the forest. We take our students to the Tuolumne Grove of Giant Sequoias. These are the largest living things on Earth, largest and oldest living things on Earth. And to be in the presence of something that's of that age, to be able to think, what have these trees seen and experienced over 2,000 years, is really a pivotal moment for a lot of students and kids. To really feel like there's something, even to tap into something that's really bigger than themselves. So I think Yosemite, also just being the first national park, you know, the very first protected area that was set aside in order for us to tell that, it's a beautiful place to tell that story of stewardship, that 150 years ago, people really looked into the future and they thought, this is a place that needs to be protected for future generations. And for Yosemite to be the birthplace of that idea and the birthplace of the national park idea, an idea that spread across the country, and we now have over 400 national parks, and it all started in a place like Yosemite, is another part of the overall story that we're able to share with our students to get them thinking about the next 100 years, and what do they want to protect for the generations to come, and what role do they want to play? And we hope that by the time they leave our programs, we've planted some of those seeds with them for them to be thinking about as they grow up to become adults, young people who are making decisions about the future of national parks and protected areas and the planet.
Well, when I send students to the Nature Bridge program at Yosemite, one of the things I pick out a couple of them that I think will be receptive, and I ask them if they've ever heard of two people who are intimately associated with the history of that place. And a lot of times they don't know those names. Can you guess who those two people are?
I would guess John Muir is one of them.
Yes.
And maybe Galen Clark?
No. Photographer.
Ansel Adams?
Yes. And I expose them to their work. And the reason I do that is because those two little boys, John Muir and especially Ansel Adams, would have been identified as having ADHD today and put on meds and perhaps grown up in a horrible urban environment in a classroom factory kind of setting. And it was the experience that they had in Yosemite that transformed them.
Yeah, it's amazing, and the power of a place like that, a place and the power of nature, and John Muir, you know, feeling just so compelled even as a child to be outside and to explore and to ask questions and to have that, you know, to really have that sense of wanting these places to be protected into the future is an incredible legacy that our students get to experience on a day-to-day basis. And also Ansel Adams with the work that he did in bringing these places really to the masses to get people to really see the beauty. Some of the very first stewards of Yosemite were artists who were drawing pictures of the waterfalls and sending them to journals on the East Coast, and people thought they were crazy out there in the West. How could something like this possibly exist? So that ability to really take in a place, particularly in that artistic sense as well, is something we try to share with our students as well, and that's a way that they can also interpret this place and take it into their hearts and make it a part of them.
Christina, I really appreciate you talking to us today. Christina Rylands, head of the Nature Bridge at Yosemite Program. It was a delight to talk to you. And thanks for all this wonderful work you're doing for kids of all ages, connecting them with nature, because once they're connected, I think that lasts a lifetime.
That's our hope. Thanks so much, David. I appreciate it.
Thanks to Christina Rylands from Nature Bridge at Yosemite. Next, our producer Nolan Ford talks to Anna Bachman from the McConnell Foundation based in Redding, California. Bachman oversees a scholarship program that sends high school students, all expenses paid, to participate in Nature Bridge.
Anna Bachman, welcome to Blue Dot.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here.
So what exactly is the Nature Bridge program offered by the McConnell Foundation, and who is eligible?
Okay, so Nature Bridge is a nonprofit organization that has provided outdoor environmental education since 1971. They started out as Yosemite Institute. They provide the educators who teach the students who participate in the program. The McConnell Foundation provides funding for students from Shasta, Siskiyou, Trinity, Tehama, and Modoc counties. We take sophomores and juniors, and really the program is open to any student who has an interest in the outdoors. The criteria are that they are responsible, reliable, and get along well with others. We'd like to take a mix of every academic level, and I do all the logistics for it, all the paperwork and whatnot, and then I do go on the trip to make sure everything I've done behind the desk actually has panned out on the ground.
So you actually get to go out yourself as well.
I do. It is the reward of the year spent organizing and putting this thing together.
When did the McConnell Foundation first start funding the Nature Bridge at Yosemite program, and how and why was it chosen?
So the foundation started funding the program in 1989. It was chosen because our CEO heard about the program from a partner in the law firm that he was in. His partner said, hey, you got to check this thing out. And so 1990, the first group of students went. And it was just an educational program that was different than, you know, scholarships for college education, which we also do. The foundation believes in lifelong learning, and so we invested in the program.
And what do the students experience during their week at Yosemite National Park?
So they experience connection. That's the big thing. Through the trail groups that they're in and the field instructors who teach them, you know, according to state standards, but what they get out of it at the end of the week is a connection to nature, a connection to the earth, connection to themselves and to others. The max is about 140. This year we have 138 students going from 30 different schools. It's funny, we always have more girls than boys. So, you know, if the young men are interested, there's usually 2 to 3 times more girls. But, you know, we get there and I mix them up into trail groups and I put them with students who they hopefully don't know at the beginning of the week so that when they first get to know each other, it's without the expectations and the stereotypes and the stuff that they bring with them from home. You know, what GPA they have, what car they drive, what clique they're in, what sport. All of that stuff is gone, and they connect with each other in this amazing place that is so different from where they come from. I think, you know, they all come from rural Northern California, and they see mountains every day, and they see beauty, you know, and rivers and streams. But it's human nature to kind of not see it, you know,
take it for granted.
You take it for granted. Yeah, yeah. And you don't see what's in front of you because you see it every day. And then we get to Yosemite and it is grand and it is cold and the air is crisp and they are out of their shell. And I think it just helps them open up so much. And then they get to explore this beautiful place that has, you know, some kids have been there. And they've seen it, but this, they are getting to know it. The field instructors have secret places that they take the kids to, and they educate them on geology and geography and the cultural history in a fun way, in a way that they don't really get on their own, you know, as a tourist.
Well, my last question is what's your favorite part of being the coordinator for the McConnell Foundation's Yosemite Nature Bridge program?
So this is my 14th year, and the thing that still amazes me is the difference that it makes in each student from Sunday when we leave to Friday when we get back. You can see it in their faces. You can hear it in their voices, and it is such a huge reward.
Well, Dave actually spoke with someone who has experienced the program, so let's jump to his interview with one of his former students, Nicole Curiel.
Tell us about some of the things that you did, some of the experiences you had. Just briefly, like, tell us about one thing you remember that was really a neat activity that you grew from.
So I'll talk about one experience because the other one I could talk for ages. So to make it brief, I'll talk about the spider caves, and that was definitely just a completely fun and different experience that I've never been able to experience before. For those of you who don't know, the spider caves are these caves that are formed from rock fall, and inside of them, it's completely pitch black, dark. And a lot of people like to go inside of them and try to find their way out. There's different routes you can take. And many of those people actually use flashlights because you're completely blind in there if you don't. And what we did with my group, which was about 15 different high schoolers, is that we actually went in through a route, and our guide was the first person to go in. And what we had to do is that we had to, in a single file line, give directions to the person behind us about how to manage our way. So our guide was the first one, which would relay the message back to the person next to her, and then so on and so forth. So it was really a trust exercise because there could have been like a completely pointy rock right next to my head and I may have never known unless my person in front of me told me. So that was completely how it was. Like, for example, the person in front of me would have to tell me, so you're gonna put your right foot on this rock and don't lean to your left because there's a completely pointy rock there and there's this edge and you might slip. So now put your right foot there, step over to your left and take a step in front. And then I had to give the same message to the person behind me, and then it would just go down the line for like the next 13.
And just for the record, there's not really a bunch of spiders in the spider cases there.
No, not at all. At least I can't, well, I couldn't see, so I hope not.
People always hear that and they think, oh my gosh, you're going into a cave filled with spiders. They're just called that. I'd like to know, as far as just the overall experience, did it change you at all? Or how did you emerge from going to a week in Yosemite? How did you feel afterwards compared to going in?
Definitely, I was a person who always thought it was very cliche to say that we have to be in touch with our nature. Like, I know now it's very essential for our mental health and our mental state of being. But before, I was a junior, I thought of the idea as being very cliche. And after experiencing a whole week in Yosemite with complete strangers and hiking vernal falls in the complete snow, rain and hail, all three forms, I mean, I came back and was almost like a new person. Like, I was very in touch with who I am as a person and realized that there's no shame in being a nature hippie.
I like that. There's no shame in being a nature hippie. Yeah, and for a girl from a rural area in Tehama County, you can get shamed for that, can't you?
Yes, definitely. I mean, and especially, I mean, from being from Corning, not every single person is a farmer or a cattle rancher. So there's definitely those people who kind of did shame and found the idea very cliche. So, and I fell into it. I mean, it's obviously like peer pressure, and that's the age we live in. We're high schoolers. So going to Yosemite definitely helped me break out of that mold and step out into this new idea.
Thanks again to all of our guests. Florence Williams, author of The Nature Fix, Christina Rylance from Nature Bridge at Yosemite, Anna Bachman from the McConnell Foundation, and Corning Union High School student Nicole Curiel. Blue Dot is a production of North State Public Radio. Listen to this and past episodes at mynspr.org and subscribe to Blue Dot at NPR Podcasts, iTunes, or wherever you get your podcast groove on. Follow us on Twitter at NSPR News and me at Dave Shlom. Our theme music is by Matt Schultz. Blue Dot is produced and engineered by the man on the board, Nolan Ford. For all of us here, I remind you there that from deep space, we all live on a pale blue dot.